I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Jo Smith. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's wonderful and very comfortable in here.
Well, we did not tell too many people how comfortable it is in here. They'll all want to be coming in and have an interview. But you know this building, the old Customs House, 8 Phillimore Street, Fremantle, West End. Magnificent old building. I think Circus WA was once downstairs, Jo.
It was indeed. So probably about 30 years ago, we had the Burke government in power. And there's many things that might be said about the Burke government. But at that time, incredible arts minister, David Parker, just saw the immense opportunity of using old rundown buildings and giving them to the art sector. And there's heaps of buildings around. This is one of them. Spare Parts Puppet Theatre building is another one. Obviously, that's got a big story around it. But what it meant was, at Old Customs House, what happened is a hub began. It's where a bunch of young creatives, yeah, they might have been a bit feral, but inside that feral space is when people start to explore their humanity, our humanity, and start to question and make. And there were visual artists, there were sound artists, and there were circus performers in this space. And across the years, everybody kind of moved out and became organisations and started to grow up. And the circus organisation started as a performance platform, so that was Berserkus. There was lots of young people knocking on the door going, I want to learn circus, I want to learn what you do. So they then turned it into Cirque Berserk. Brendan Coleman and Ross Vegas and Isabel Lyle were very much headed that whole process. And so they continued to perform and they continued to teach young people through this Cirque Berserk program. And like everybody, everything kind of grows up and changes. It responds to government changes and bureaucratic changes and funding changes. And the organisation slowly developed over time until when I first came across them probably in the 90s. Late 90s, I was doing performance art installation and they taught me rigging and how to climb and how to hang myself from things. Sound kinky, wasn't at all kinky at the time. And kind of stayed in touch a little bit with some of the circus crew. It wasn't a space that I played in much, but I was always fascinated by the form. And so it wasn't actually until 2016 I was invited to join the board of Circus WA. My daughter was starting to train in circus at the same time. And so I stepped back into the building for the first time in a very long time in 2016 and went, oh my goodness, WA is about to lose an extraordinary circus history here in Old Customs House. They had not been managed well. The funding had disintegrated and they had been asked to leave the building. And the departure from the expectation that the circus should leave the building was the very thing that made them vulnerable. To make someone homeless brings everything else crashing down on top of you.
It's an amazing thing, circus. Everybody listening to this will have their own memories of going to a circus. My formative years as a kid at primary school were spent in the central wheat belt in Western Australia, and I still remember the day the circus came to town, and there were some animals, and there was a horse, and there was a cowboy, and he had a whip, and there were clowns, and there was a big tent, and the whole thing is thrilling. And as I say, everyone will have their own memory. Kids today have probably been to Cirque du Soleil, or I remember years ago when my kids were smaller in Canberra, seeing Circus Oz, you had the modern form. But what is it about circus in one form or another that sort of makes people just get caught up in it all?
Well, I think it's the extraordinariness, is that a word? The extraordinary things that a human body can do. Circus performers push the parameters of the physical body and also the social mind, it pushes the parameter. So it pushes these two things right to the edge of thinking. So that you're sitting, watching a stage and somebody doing the most extraordinary unachievable piece of either they've twisted themselves inside out, or they're simply balancing a 10-piece set of cooking equipment on a stick hanging in their mouth, which actually somebody in WA actually does this act. So, you know, from the ridiculously extraordinary to the most powerful work. You know, you've got people doing four highs these days. That means three piles people stacked on top of one person's shoulders. And to watch the body at the edge of ability teetering there. And as an audience member, you watch and you jump and launch into the physicality of that space. And you're on the edge of your chair, wishing and hoping for achievement. And the other thing that circus does is, because they're always teaching on that edge of possibility, failure happens. This wonderful thing called failure happens publicly, public space.
I often wondered whether failure happens. I suppose I can remember seeing people who were doing trapeze and something didn't work, but they just went back and got
That's
back
right.
on the horse or got back on the trapeze.
Absolutely. So they fail, and part of the act is they return. And the moment that this happens, the audience sits further forward and they breathe into the space and they breathe their joy and desire for success into that person on the stage. And they do it again, and they get the trick. So there's always this incredible power and incredible vulnerability all at the same time. And then the other thing that you can do with circus, so you can have not so much meaning on the stage, you could just, it's just the bodies in space doing extraordinary things to wild music, or you could actually have a story in there as well. And so the power of circus in storytelling is that as that audience is disarmed in that space, in that moment, by that trick, the story is trickling into them.
So opera tells a story through voice, through operatic performance, but you can tell a story through all of the techniques that a circus can deploy.
Absolutely, yeah. In the same way that dance will tell a story, it's physical theatre. Circus does utilise voice often, it uses objects, so it's object theatre, physical theatre, circus and dance. So it's this kind of mass group of skills. You'll find also often within circus we'll utilise live music as well.
Yes.
There's a real desire for the live body in space. So when we get taken away from the opportunity to be in a space in our physical bodies like COVID took us through, it's almost impossible to exist as an art form or even as your sole work. To be removed from a stage is no longer really viable online.
Jo, I have the impression that circus as we know it today is a relatively recent phenomenon over the last couple of hundred years. I can remember the days when the great Moscow circus was being brought here by Michael Edgley. It doesn't seem so many years ago. And as an interesting aside, I gather that all of the Russian or Moscow circuses were nationalised after the 1917 revolution. Amazing, created this big organisation. So people are familiar with these grand performances, but tell us about Circus WA, because I think you're the artistic director of it.
I am indeed. I might just pop back a little bit more history.
Yes,
again.
Please.
So the moment that the world says, you know, making animals perform and do weird stuff is probably not so cool anymore. But hey, if humans want to do weird stuff with their bodies, then the humans are the animals of the circus. So let's go. There was this massive movement in Circus Oz. Was an incredibly powerful, incredibly important for the world
yes.
in circus, in transforming circus from being what we call trad circus or traditional circus, in the round with animals, going round and round in circles, doing amazing tricks with their bodies. Circus, I'd said, we don't have animals, we have ourselves, we have our intellect, and we have story to tell. Let's go. And they were
not an animal inside. It was astonishing.
Just endless human animals doing extraordinary things and living right on the edge of, again, possibility and potential. And they went out into the world and really they transformed the way that Europe thought about circus. The impact of Australia internationally was huge. What we see now, what we went through was a depletion of circus in Australia. As Europe kind of took off, Australia, as we all know, funding models to the arts is very, very small and has disintegrated quite rapidly across the time. The skill and capacity to articulate who we are, why we do it, and how we do it is a whole skill set that is not always the person's skill set who is creating and performing on a stage. And so it really struggled.
Reinvention is required, I suppose, to an extent.
Well, I think I will often lay the blame straight on the governing bodies of our country and say, well, if you aren't going to invest in diversity and the people and the different brains that exist in our world, then no, they can't flourish. If you're only ever saying that it's white middle class fella training through university language that we need to articulate and explain what it is that we do and reify that into, you know, into a truth, then you block out so many voices. And if you're not going to give us the money to give us the people to bridge that story across, then we're just going to really struggle. And that's been the struggle, is finding those bridges.
And it still is. So let's, in a sense, as a case study, go then to Circus WA. Tell us about its inception, conception, where we're at.
Okay, so where we're at the moment is, when I stepped into Circus WA at the end of 2016, the first thing that needed to be achieved was survival. I sacked myself from the board and I said I will give myself to the office for a number of months and we'll see if it's achievable. So I stepped into the office and during that 6 month phase, I really just did a lot of research around WA and circus in WA and circus in Metro. There still is, the Circus Centre run by a fellow called Chris Mayhew, who's very well known nationally. Isabel Lyle, originally from Cirque Berserk, she has a centre called Cirque West. Out into the city centre, and then there's Connecticut to the north in Malaga, and they do a lot of fringe performances. So looking around at the landscape and what we had, what I noticed was that there was still a fairly traditional focus on circus form and for circus structure, cabaret style. And what I was interested in, because it's my background is contemporary art. I was working contemporary dance just prior to stepping into Circus WA. I was interested to really lean into the contemporary circus form. So in this space, we're talking about using physical theatre, traditional circus, and telling stories. Really following along the lines of companies like Gravity's and Other Myths, in Adelaide, Circa, in Brisbane, Circus Oz was a big inspiration, and many other companies around. So the idea for the programming that I was proposing to the organisation and the people was that we would offer something slightly different. We would become a state-funded organisation. The state funding that should have been there years before I turned up, and we would bring that back in. We would be the company that would be training young people in circus arts to tell story, to become creatives and to tell those stories. So to learn really wicked tricks, but also have an integrity around what it, a knowledge around what it is that their job is. Their job is serious. Their job is to take the story through their body and express that body on a stage and be accountable for the impact that they have on audience members and recognise the power that they carry with them as they go onto that stage. So at Circus WA now, the focus is very much in partnership with all those other circus training centres. We offer something different but similar. So we're all teaching circus skills. And at Circus WA, we're working towards creating productions that are of a different value. We talk about production value in the art. So this means sound and light and staging and props and costume and all the things that wrap around them. I wanted to be able to distill some money towards this community to wrap their shows and performance and ideas up into a package that could then go on to main stage theatre. And we've been doing that. We've been doing that since 2019. We did a massive production at the State Theatre Centre with Dada. I was approached by a young man in a wheelchair, Hugo Flavel. He's still working with us. And he told me that he was going to do circus. And I didn't know a lot about circus, and maybe that was the good thing, that I didn't know so much about circus. And I said, sure, Hugo, let's see how we go. And so we created a project with Dada that was for teenagers with high support needs, disabilities, working with our teenagers who had all ability in the circus space, and they were to create a show together. And so we spent 2 years creating that show together.
Remind our listeners who Dada are.
Dada is WA's biggest disability in the arts provider. They work in disabilities and disadvantage in the arts. And their acronym is Dada, but they are no longer known by the full title, but by
that. Just by the name. The acronym's a word.
Indeed.
So what, in terms of its structure and its numbers and its sort of production life in a calendar year, is happening with Circus WA now? Mm.
So we're still talking about living on the brink of survival. We still really do live on the brink of survival. We live in a park in a tent. The tent's been there since 2017. The tent is a big top. It was our survival strategy.
And this is for people who know Fremantle well or don't know it so well. It's near Clancy's Fish Pub,
and
pretty much just in the east end of Fremantle. It's a very distinctive location, and the Big Top can't be missed.
Yeah, the City of Fremantle, Department of Culture and the Arts, Department of Planning, Land and Housing, Clancy's, Dada, all wrapped around together to come up with this idea of creating that hub in that space. And Clancy's was just like, Fish Pub was just beside themselves going, we've got friends at last. You know, they'd been sitting out there by themselves in Princess May Park for all those years. So it was really lovely to come in. Dada inhabited the old boys' schools. Inside the old boys' school, you also had Fremantle Foundation, philanthropic organisation, Circus WA, to the outside, and we all actually live as this little community, really. You know, I climb really high stuff and I've got strong muscles and I lift heavy stuff for them. They provide us venue space and water and access, and Clancy's, you know, we've just always got something on the go together. So it does create a really beautiful vibe. It creates an opportunity for those exchanges. So that exchange that we did with Dada for 2019, that's was made really possible because we were now side by side living together. We developed our skills around how do you work with people with disabilities and how can you challenge ourselves to see circus differently through the bodies of those young people.
So in terms of the performers, how many typically do you have coming through and what sort of age range?
Yeah, cool. So we have a really tight business model. We should be able to break even with our classes, but the venue doesn't allow it to be so. So if we manage to get 200 students in a term, then we're kind of almost holding it together. But the Big Top can't sustain much more than that. The Big Top in the middle of summer is excruciatingly hot. It's a PVC tent, and in winter it's excruciatingly cold. So those that stick with us and go through with us will have to be some of the most resilient, strong young people we've ever come across, plus our trainers, extraordinary trainers, creative, physically able, and compassionate trainers who have a capacity to communicate across quite a diverse range.
How young are the ones who come into the classes?
Oh, we do. We have a program for toddlers and their parents, and so that's actually really about supporting parents to chuck their kids around, to feel safe that they can throw their kids around, and starting to build a bit of physical literacy into the young body as well. 5 to 7 year olds, they come in for an hour a week and they have a bit of a play around, so they'll start in that space. So around 8 years of age, we start to kind of allow the children to choose to become more focused on learning skills. We try and hold them back a little bit. We don't like the idea of them becoming like gymnasts. That's what makes us step different to gymnasts. We will attend to the skills and the body of the young child, but we're not going to push them hard at such a young age. We want to build their spirit and their connection to space first. And then at around the age of 10 to 15, that's when the transition really starts to happen and they start to really ramp up their training. They, at the age of 15, they can apply to become a part of what's called an academy. The Fremantle Foundation's Impact 100 funded us last year to launch and develop our first academy. While we had a youth training program prior to this, this would be the first time that we would audition young people and we would give them really cheap training that they needed to grow and develop. So that was across last year. So in that program, we've got a performance group. So there's 18 of those young people in that program. And then we've got 11 younger kids from 10 to 15 who want to learn how to perform. So they have their own little separate stream that they're developing their skills and they'll do some performances. The main performance group is who we're focused on, creating our performance program for the year. So we roughly run 3 performances a year with these young people. Some of the performance presentations are what we would call a work in progress. So last year we did a work in progress. This production was called Bespoke. Continuing our relationship with people with disabilities. We've got 5 young people with disabilities in that production. Sorry, 6 young people with disabilities in that production with our ensemble wrapping around them to work alongside and with them to articulate the story. And that production was presented by us with the support of City of Fremantle at the Town Hall. 10 Nights in Port will always give us a platform to perform. So they supported us to present a new production called Eclipse. Eclipse is a story for and by the young people, reflecting on who and what this world is that they live in right now. All the skanky, cranky, nasty, unstuck bits of our humanity and our world that they live in. But the task for them is to vision their future. Something positive, as something exciting, as something that they will work towards to become. And so that production's called Eclipse. And that one is actually is sitting on the edge of being a really big production. And it's got a partnership with NICA. The National Institute of Circus Arts is Australia's national training centre in Melbourne. We've also got a partnership with that one through Maxima Circus, which is WA's contemporary circus company, who is also a resident of the Big Top as well. So that productions is again being supported by the City of Fremantle to grow and develop in the Town Hall.
A couple of issues arise out of that for me, like with any huge sort of performance industry, I suppose. There have to be people who are what you might call showrunners, people who come up with a concept for the one you've just described and who basically write the story and the narrative into which the circus skills then get adapted, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about who, if you like, to mix all of my expressions, sort of choreographs and contemplates what's going to happen, and what are the sorts of skills that we're talking about these days that then get brought into it?
Great. The way that a circus traditionally works is quite a democratic landscape. I think a lot of creatives sit inside a democratic landscape. But circus is particularly democratic in the way that people have roles, but everyone is of value, of equal value all the time. So there's always this seeking for equality. So where do they come from and where do they go to? So what I'll stick to those two shows. One is Bespoke, the disabilities one, and one is Eclipse. So with Bespoke, I came up with the framework and the concept and raised the money for the project. And then that project gets passed on to people who I feel need to work in that and will deliver a program that's and a performance outcome that's important. That project also came out of a partnership with Flipside Circus in Brisbane. One of the things I'm always seeking for the growth of this little tiny circus centre is partnerships and connections with others that will give us the thing that we don't have or we don't have the capacity to raise. So with the support of Flipside Circus, we developed further this framework. We brought in an amazing director that they've worked with before, Natano Fatanana, and he has worked with their disabilities program before. So he's come over, we've worked with local artist Brian Walchin to create the set design, and he's worked with people with disabilities before as well. Nell Simpson is a circus artist who's worked with Dada for a very, very long time. And Sarah Healy is a new young emerging artist who is learning to write these stories. And we've got a projection artist, Rolly Skender. And he works alongside Hugo Flavel, who is the young man who posed the question to me many years ago, I will do circus. And so he continues on with us as an artist and as a performer himself. And so that work, it's taking two and a bit years to create. We're running into our final production outcome, which will go onto main stage in Bunbury. So we're touring them down to Bunbury, main stage. The reason we go to Bunbury is because that's where we got offered a main stage that we could afford with Fiona De Garris, who's quite an extraordinary producer herself and, you know, wonderful mentor to many of us in WA. So to actually have this opportunity to be down there alongside Fiona De Garris and to be invited and supported at Bunbury, and that's really exciting to watch that come to main stage. The Eclipse show is a new model, and this one's a super exciting model, and I'm hoping that NICA will continue it in that the concept for this project started in WA in a conversation with myself and Sally Richardson. Sally Richardson generated the project and the framework of it, and then it went to NICA. There's a whole story behind that, but it did end up going to NICA first, and NICA performed it. Their graduate students performed Eclipse. After this, I went back to NICA and I said, can we have that story? Can we have the sound and can we have the props and can we have that? And they just went, yes, because they could do nothing with it. And for me it was important that we brought the story back to young people, to the youth that we have. And so we brought it back here with some of the structures of that performance. We took the kids on tour over to Melbourne, they learnt some of the work, and it's still a work in progress and it's still in development. So we'll have another 12 to 18 months of developing that work. So it takes a good period of time. It takes up to 2 years really to create a work. And sometimes actually we'll finish a work and there'll be new kids in it. They won't actually, and we'll have lost the kids from the beginning. So kids do come and go from these shows. But
it's fascinating just listening to you talk about that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess like many of the performing arts, you plan ahead, you think to yourself, how long is Eclipse going to run for on a main stage somewhere? How many of those sort of productions can you come up with in a year? Are you going to get a good community response? What's the revenue going to be when you look at your funding model? How much more money do you need from municipalities like City of Fremantle, state governments, national governments, all of those funds? And that's your job. In many respects, I take it to work through all of those issues.
Yes, that is my job, one of many jobs. I'm the artistic director of Circus WA, and that is the title that I take and I present to the public, because essentially that's what I'm good at. But I'm also a CEO of the organisation as well. So I'm obviously okay at it because Circus WA is doing okay. But it's not unusual for arts organisations to have this role, CEO, AD. And it's incredibly complex, and it's more than a full-time job to negotiate and navigate those spaces and keep these spaces alive. And the reason is because we can't find the funding or the support to be able to employ the people that can manage those spaces. The expectations from our bureaucratic governance, federal, state, local, is huge. And so the assumption is that all that we do and all the reporting that we do, this is all great governance, it's great for the business, but it's a massive load compared to, say, a private business would be a much easier model to run with.
At least for Circus WA and the role that you play, I mean, how many substantial performances a year can the public expect to witness?
Three. And, so three's our kind of sweet spot now that we've found works.
And ideally they are at sort of equal junctures through the year, I take it.
Yeah. So we've just come off the back of a new development. It's called Pass the Salt. We presented it at Fringe World. New time director Ella Norton, who's a Fremantle, originally from Fremantle, and has become very well known through Yuck Circus. So she's back cutting her teeth on directing with us. That work will continue to develop and be presented again at International Street Arts Festival. So that first half of the year, there's one show that's being developed across that period of time.
Pass the Salt has a life beyond its relatively limited fringe performance in
Freo. Absolutely. There's always these opportunities for a show to grow and to develop. And also we're always thinking about what do the students need? And so the students of circus, their future as a professional circus performer is on the streets, performing on the streets, is on a stage, performing main stage, is in a commercial setting where they're just walking around on stilts looking glamorous with costumes on. It's all of these incredible things that they can knit together and have a very lucrative future if they would like it and if they have the tenacity to take it. It does take a lot of tenacity. It's not that easy, but yeah.
In terms of the location of Circus WA under the big tent, which I think you share with some others, what's the future there? Would there be in a more ideal place? What does Circus WA want ideally?
So I'll share you the dream and what I'm trying to vision every single night before I go to bed. Circus WA, it can't exist in a park in a tent forever. Really, it can't exist for as long as it's existed, and yet it has and grown and flourished under that big top. And so for that, I'm incredibly grateful for the strength, tenacity and capacity of our trainers that have run everything out of that big top. This year, or end of last year, we got a few indicators off the tent that she's beginning to decay. And so this is the end of her life, really, as far as the skin goes. The skin can be replaced at an expense. So the deterioration on the skin puts us in a predicament where we are assessing and observing quite regularly now to ensure that it's safe. The moment that it's not safe, we will lower this tent. We know we've got through until March in the tent. Following that, we'll reassess and we won't know. But the moment she's not safe, she will just come down and be put away. What happens to all of our training programs and our performances that are mid-run, the investment that's happened for us, well, we'll try and put a few bits and pieces together. The City of Fremantle said that they will support us in whatever way they can, but it will not be the same. So it will be very, very complex. So the conversation has been running with the state government since 2017, actually, going, yeah, we're going in a park for a short period of time, but we need your support. If we're going to grow Circus WA as a centre that can support resident companies, so we do support these resident companies, we have Yuck Circus, Maxima Circus, Acrobatch, and now Flip Tees as residents in our Big Top. If we're going to offer this to the state, to this sector of circus, then we need the support and we need a training centre. At the moment we've got Fringe on. It's massive. And you know the people that they sell, the state sells us and Fringe sells us, it's circus. We're used all the time to sell and market. And yet there is no place for any of those people to go and train sustainably in. They're all welcome at the Big Top whenever they want to, when we're not running classes, but it's 40 degrees Celsius in the middle of the day, and so training in there is incredibly hard.
This week's going to be those temperatures, and we've had them a number of weeks this year already. If the Big Top came down in March, what would happen? Where would you go?
Well, we do have a backup plan, and we'll be in various little tiny halls. Fremantle Theatre Company has reached their hands out, and City of Fremantle have reached their hands out. We will piece together bits and pieces and opportunities because that's just what we do. So we know we can do that, and we've got lots of people who want to support. The thing that I'm dreaming about every night is the ports. Those port sheds have been empty for way too long. As you know, and you were involved in the whole Future Fremantle conversations, as was I in some of those meetings, visioning what that port's landscape could have been for many years, but hasn't been, but will be into the future is super exciting. The shed that I have our focus on is Sea Shed.
Sea Shed's just been sort of repaired.
All of the sheds, so C, B, well, A was done first, yeah. E shed's getting dealt with now as well. And D shed as well. So they've all been, you know, the ports have put a huge amount of money back into them to fix them up and get them back to spec.
C has the dimensions that you'd like?
Not quite, but pretty good. So spatially, floor space, absolutely, it's fabulous. We can take over a quarter of it. We don't need the whole shed. The shed's massive. It's like way too big for us. But definitely a quarter of it. There's three sections to Sea Shed or to all the sheds. It runs parallel with the river, three sections running parallel with the river. The one that's furthest away from the river is the highest point, so that goes to 5.5 metres and 6 metres to the apex.
You need as much height as you can get.
We work at the moment at 8 metre height. So circus is a space-eating adventure that you need a lot of space to create and make. So while the Sea Shed is not perfect in its height, it's enough height for us to achieve and develop and to start developing outside spaces as well and aerial rigging that is often required and requested of us for various things, Perth Festival, Fringe Festival. There's lots of opportunities to expand outside of that shed. But what the shed would give us is solid walls where a door can be locked. It'll still be hot inside and cold inside, but nothing compared to what we have.
It gives you a physical home. Not long ago, it was found that Victoria Quay was not a place to build, construct a film studio, but a Big Top could probably fit down there quite easily.
I don't think you'll find us ever in a Big Top as a training centre again. I'd just like to really squash people's dreams of that.
It's such a wonderfully visible sight though, isn't it? But it's too hot and too cold.
Look, so there's a couple of things that we will maintain. We will keep the Big Top. The Frio Big Top will still be ours at the end of this. We've got Princess May, not Princess May Park, the Pioneer Park across the road. We could probably pitch it in there for a performance season. So we will definitely be keeping it. She's definitely part of our heart and soul, and has been a part of the soul of circus for a very long time. It originally comes from Luna Circus, who are down in Curriedale. It's been toured up and down the West Coast, been up to Broome. Many people have grown up in that circus and maybe grown down a little bit sometimes. And so she's got a spiritual connection to the whole community. She doesn't go in a bin. but as a permanent training centre, she just can't be our home anymore. And what a building will give us is the space to build and bring those five companies into the space with us, and that they have training, permanent training. So when Fringe happens and we get this mass influx of performers nationally and internationally, they arrive here, they have a place to train in, they have a place to grow in, they have a place to exchange in, they get sucked in to the joy and the beauty of this city and the creative vibe of this city that maybe they just might not go home, or they go home and they come back because they've created a project and a concept. But none of that is possible. When there is no building, when there is no home, creativity can't be made. Performances can't be made. And an industry that is can pop, and it's got so much money value wrapped around it. I mean, we can see it at Fringe, and yet no investment. It's like it's very poor business modelling from our governments.
So, Jill, I've now got tears in my eyes. We have to keep the circus in its various components here in Fremantle. The obvious place to take it is down to Seashed. You want the state government, Minister for the Arts, David Templeman, I think, to look again and again and realise how important this is, as it plainly is at so many levels. What else do we need to say in that regard? Are you also interested to have private sponsors come behind you?
Oh, we will absolutely. Look, the moment that we get support for the movement into there, and I just have to say, David Templeman is an amazing advocate.
And he can sing.
For the arts. Well, he can sing mostly. You know.
Perhaps he can also do something on a trapeze.
No, we're not going to let him on the trapeze, but he's quite interested in the Diablo.
Right.
So we might let him have the Diablo in the hope that it won't land on his head. But no, we've had ongoing and consistent conversations with David Templeman's office and also with the Department of Local Government, Sport and Cultural Industries. They've really been very supportive. It's just the sheer complexity of bureaucracy to get there. Department of Planning, Lands and Housing has stepped in recently, so that's the whole ports negotiations that's happening there. Again, wonderful, wonderful humans in all of these local governments and state government areas. It's just that the processes are quite complex.
It can be so slow. You want it cranked up, I imagine, particularly with the big tent coming down.
We need it really cranked up, and I've really pushed really hard, and people have been very generous in stopping and listening to that. So for that, I'm incredibly grateful. The ports, it's a real struggle. I mean, it's not their thing. They don't do arts. They don't do culture. They don't do community. They do ships and stuff like that. And so, you know, when we bang on at them and we get frustrated with them, and it's hard. It's super hard for them to go, well, that's not what they do or how they think.
Well,
they've been very generous recently and beginning to open themselves up and to understand.
Things are changing, as we know. The commercial port will eventually go south, and there's the whole question, as you've said, about future of Fremantle, the activation of Victoria Quay amongst both sides of the port, and the connection to Fremantle where we are sitting. This is all things like this are going to happen. I'm sure Fremantle ports will be actively thinking how they can constructively start to make it happen now. Before we finish, Joe, just tell our listeners what they have got to look forward to in terms of buying their tickets to get to Circus WA performances for the balance of this year. We just had Fringe, lots of great reports about the performance. passing past the salt, S-A-U-L-T, like in summer salt. What's coming?
Great. So a free performance for Fremantle International Street Arts Festival. We can't tell you where the performance is going to be because we haven't quite managed to find the cafe that will give us the building to install it. It's going to be an installation. So we'll translate Pass the Salt into an installation type space where viewers can come in and watch and be a part of it. That's the dream. How far we go with that will depend. We have a tight wire which is very hard to rig, and Brendan Coleman is pulling his hair out wondering how we're going to rig it in any of those spaces. So we've got a bit to work out, but we will be there at the Street Arts Festival with Pass the Salt, and it will be free, that one. Then we're going to be having Bespoke finished out at Bunbury. It's not very far away to drive. It's like a 3-hour drive.
Oh, it's even less
actually.
So it's less than 2.5. So it would be, and it's got a great theatre there. Great places to eat, great places to stay, great places to swim. You can go and look at the dolphins.
And then come and see an incredible production by Circus WA.
How long will it run?
So it's only going to run over two days. So we're working
certainly
with...
need to get your tickets and get in.
Yeah, so tickets won't be up for sale yet. But they will be soon. We're working with people with disabilities. We have to be quite cautious about how many times we can ask them to perform. Also, we haven't got the full funding for Bespoke at this point in time, so we're running at Bespoke fast and furiously. That somebody will give us the rest of the money that I might have already spent to make that production work. I feel confident. The work is incredible. Natano Fa'anana and the team are just divine. And it's already been received well at the town hall, with people with tears in their eyes and joy in their hearts. So
after Bespoke?
After Bespoke is Eclipse.
Yes.
So
where will that likely be performed, and what period will that run over?
So we're hoping that we'll be able to put something up for that again at 10 Nights in Port. If the funding doesn't come through in time, then we'll be looking more like in October, and that'll be taking it to the next phase of development, and in preparation for either a full main stage production in 2025, we're not sure where yet, or with Perth Festival in 2026. So that's kind of where they sit. But there'll still be definitely three of these productions across this year, some of them fully finished and some of them in development. But the works in development are still well worth the money. Like, they're $10, $15 to go to these shows, and to see these young people and sitting inside... The subjects that we've asked them to attend to, it reminds us all that they're not just a bunch of shitheads sitting on phones scrolling through social media.
Oh,
this is not our young people of the future. They are this incredibly dynamic, intelligent, smart, knowledgeable, a little bit screwy, a little bit self-centred, but they're meant to be as teenagers, and they are gutsy. And they get out there and they do the work, even when they're not quite sure what's being asked of them. They do it. We can die tomorrow. Actually, I reckon these guys can take over the world, and we will be in a better position without us.
I'm confident generally about that, Joan. It's just lovely to know that there are all these young performers, young adults, and all these other older people who are just so engaged in these performing arts that make up Circus. It must be very exciting for you to be doing your job.
It's the best job in the whole world. Like, I'm utterly privileged that I'm chosen by the people of Circus WA to stay there and be a part of their journey. I don't see myself as the leader. I see myself as a part of their journey, as I come with a set of skills and I fill out the organisation with those sets of skills, and everybody else makes it work together as well.
Jo Smith, thank you very much for joining Fremantle Shipping News today.
Michael, it's been a total delight. Thank you.